big rocks and all that sort of thing.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Well then, hello and welcome to another Hot to Trot edition of the Johnny James Hot Podcast.
Yeah, because I see, I had a bones pick with you. Because I saw on Twitter, which you occasionally go on, when you're not...
Bit of fun.
When you're not banned.
Just a bit of fun.
When you're not banned.
No, I am permanently banned. That Twitter account you're looking at, if you look, it doesn't say my name or my picture. They occasionally come to me and say, "Is this you?" And I go, "No."
You honestly think that would get you out of it?
Well, it worked the first time. They literally came to me and checked with me because I put up a fucking pod we did. And I just say no. And they were like, "Well, what's your mobile number?"
So I gave them Linda's. So it says, "Join me, W. Mick Wall, and my trusty side hack."
It's a joke. Sidekick, side hack. Sidekick, side hack.
See, that's how you see this relationship.
I will change that this week.
I think
join should. Johnny
co-hosts.
James. Oh, co-hosts.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it's fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
It is.
Me and my co-host.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Easy. Are you giving me that? You've got that.
No,
gleam
I'm just saying.
You've got that gleam in your eyes.
I don't care what you say.
You look like the old cricketer at the crease, about to hit it for six.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So, lots of things to talk about, but we're going to start on, I suppose. Definitely a sad note with the tragic news in the last week or so of the death of Guy Bailey, who was the one of two, the main,
the
founding,
original,
the original and the best guitarist in the Choir Boys. Yeah. Him and Spike,
Guy and Spike the singer. They were the two.
They were the Axl and Slash
of the Gateshead or wherever it was.
They were the
Newcastle.
Eddie and Dave.
Yeah.
The Jagger and Richards, if you will.
Yeah.
The Lennon and McCartney.
The Rod and whoever.
Rod and Ronnie.
Rod and Ronnie. Yeah, that's who they were like that, weren't they?
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, go on.
Well, then I suppose when we first sort of knew the Choir Boys, they recruited Ginger, didn't they, as well? So there was Guy Bailey, Ginger, and Spike, and Nigel Mogg.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was quite a handful.
That was a great lineup.
Yeah,
in fact,
brilliant.
Didn't they not have a drummer for the longest time?
Because they got an American guy or something.
On the album.
But the four of them.
They were the choir.
They were the original, like, the Queer Boys.
As they were known.
Yeah. And then forced to change it to the Choir Boys.
Yeah. I don't know why.
No, back in 1980, whatever it was, yeah. But, I mean, they were at the forefront of, you know, it's a curious scene in that obviously LA was leading the way and Motley Crue and all of those bands. But there was a sort of scene, a scuzzy rock and roll, glam rock, call it what you want, scene in the UK.
There really was.
It was sats in the sense that you couldn't live that lifestyle, the LA lifestyle, if you were in, you know, Wales, where Tiger Tales came from, or Evesham, where Rothschild came from, or Newcastle, where Choir Boys came from. But then they came to London and they did sort of make this scene happen, you know. This,
well, there was a load of great bands. I don't think hardly any of them came from London, but there was the Choir Boys, Wolfsbane,
of course, the mighty Wolfsbane
from the Midlands,
the Van Halen of Tamworth,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Tiger Tales, the other one you just mentioned,
Rothschild. They were
Rothschild.
A bit earlier than that, weren't they? But there were,
Hang on. Also, Dogstermoor.
Dogstermoor, yeah, with Tyler. Yeah,
yeah. They were from the Midlands, or he was.
Tattooed Love Boys.
Tattooed Love Boys.
Yeah,
what a great name.
Yeah, it was a great name.
It was a scene.
Definitely a scene. And it was kind of centred around the fact that Spike, when he arrived in London, started that club, didn't he, with Butts. Do you remember Spike and Butts? They used to have that club night.
Oh,
and it was every Tuesday. And it would sort of carry on. You know, there'd be a gig and then the club night would happen. And it was called Butts and Spikes. And who Butts was in another... Maybe he was in Dogs to Moor or something, but they definitely had the club night.
Because Ray Zell was in a group, wasn't he?
Called Marionette.
Yeah.
Ray Zell was kind of involved with all of those people. And then, you know, it was Stevie James from Tiger Tales and Pepsi Tate, the late Pepsi Tate. It's very, you know, sad that he died quite a long while ago.
Yeah, he did.
You know, and he was a lovely bloke.
Didn't Pepsi. We used to take the piss out of Pepsi
quite a lot,
Kerrang for shaving his legs?
Yeah.
I don't even know if he did. We just started the rumour.
No, but there was
rumour.
That sort of crossover, wasn't there? Because Ginger used to write horror film reviews for Kerrang. I can't remember if he did it under a pseudonym. I think he did. I'm trying to remember, because I used to run that page, the Culture page, with a K.
Yeah.
And Ginger used to be able to get hold of... what you would do back in the day called video nasties.
Oh, yes.
You know, ones with people, the Evil Dead and things like that. Ginger would get hold of copies of those and review them, which was quite funny. And Pepsi, I'm sure, wrote some stuff, drew some stuff. He was a brilliant artist, wasn't he? I'm sure he drew some stuff.
It rings a bell.
He featured in the famous... we used to do Kerrang merchandise.
Oh, yeah.
And you could buy sweatshirts and stuff like that. Pepsi was one of the male models for that.
He was prettier than the girl.
We
had a lady killer girl in there.
Yeah.
And he was more... He was actually
better looking than her.
Yeah. Which, to be honest, given the level of lady killer we used to get...
Don't start with your sexist nonsense. You used to love that, opening all the letters. If a letter came in addressed to lady killers, you'd rip that one open first. Have a look at the photos.
In my capacity as View from the Bar editor, you see, it was important that I, in the context of the mag, that I thoroughly check all photographic material.
And, of course, speaking of View from the Bar, that's where Spike and Guy... really kind of got their reputation, wasn't it? Because
it was.
Whether it was Spike's Club or wherever it was you went, they always, you know, very much seemed to be there.
They always were.
Yeah.
But so was Neil Murray.
Yeah.
Do you know, I interviewed Neil Murray. What book would that be? Black Sabbath. So we're going back 10
years.
Well,
he was in Black Sabbath.
Of course he was.
Of course he was. He was in everything.
And everyone was in Black Sabbath at a certain point in the late 80s, early 90s. Now, he was in Sabbath with Cozy Powell, the singer, the cat, Tony the Cat Martin. Oh, not Catley, no, that was the other cat. Not that cat, this cat. Who else? So, Neil Murray on bass, Cozy, and then, Don Airey on keyboard.
Yeah.
I was just remembering Neil Murray. Yeah. Oh, because... 10 years ago, when I'm working on the book on Sabbath, I thought I'd track Neil down.
Yeah.
Because no one talks to Neil about his Sabbath era. And I don't know what he does now, but at the time he was working in the Pitt Orchestra in a musical. It might have been We Will Rock You, or it might have been something else.
Yeah.
He was in that.
Yeah.
Regular gig.
Yeah, good
well
gig.
Paid.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
But busy, you know, matinees and evenings and that. And he seemed a little bit evasive, but the man's busy. But anyway, I finally got him on the phone, and I was really expecting, hey, you know, remember the old days? And because we always got on, Neil got on with everybody, didn't he? He was
That's why he got invited to everything, because he could oil the social wheels.
And if he wasn't invited, he just turned up and you assumed he had been
invited, yeah.
He seemed a bit off. And so eventually I said, he's a very nice bloke, you know. I was like, everything okay? He said, it took me a long while to get over it. But, you know, there was a period where, to be honest, your name was mud to me.
Ooh, another one.
Another one
on the list.
I was like, really? Why? Because all I could think was, we always got on great and he was always in View from the Bar.
Yeah.
And he was saying, he wouldn't be specific, but the general sort of vibe was, all that View from the Bar stuff did him no favours.
Oh, really? What, because we just said he was a ligger?
Yeah. I think we would put him in places even if he didn't turn up. It was one of those.
Who was there? Oh, I'm sure Neil Murray was there. Definitely. Yeah.
And so it was quite sad. I found myself apologising for something I didn't know what I was apologising for. Just, Neil, I don't know what it was, but whatever it was, I apologise. I've never had any bad feelings towards you, you know. So he would be there. And as for Pepsi, I think I started that rumour in View from the Bar that he shaved his legs.
Yeah. Well, do you remember Stevie James, who was the sort of live wire singer, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah.
He chased Malcolm down Wardour Street with a plank of wood.
Malcolm Doane?
Yeah.
That would have been in his Yumble Car days, wasn't it?
I think probably after, because Tiger Tales was slightly after that, weren't they? Yeah, there was some row going on in the marquee.
Of course. And Malcolm in the middle.
Or the Samaritz. Yeah.
Samaritz. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Where you would also always find Spike and Guy.
Yeah.
And the Samaritz, for people that don't remember, was actually a restaurant over the road from the marquee that had some kind of weird upstairs drinking room, didn't it? I mean, it was... Downstairs?
Because I remember having to go down the
stairs. Yeah, downstairs, wasn't it? Yeah. But it was there was the restaurant, and then the guy used to, can't remember his name now, but the guy who ran it used to keep it open downstairs, because commercially it made great sense.
Well, it was always full of
people who'd been in the marquee.
Guy, Lemmy, Neil Murray.
Yeah, because back in those days the pubs used to close.
They did.
Some of the pubs closed at 11. What did you do?
Well, the marquee in Wardour Street, there was that kind of Bermuda Triangle of you'd start in the ship.
Yeah, which was next, very on the corner by the marquee.
From the ship, stagger to the marquee. Marquee end, stagger across the road to St. Moritz.
Yeah.
And I remember the steps because one particular night I nearly got into a fight. It was like a Marillion thing.
Yeah.
And but all the usual crowd were there. And I'd had a couple of very small sherries and wasn't feeling myself. And I forget the background, but usual drunken thing, what are you looking at? I'll have you. There was just some bloke with his mates in the corner. And I think they just, when I used to do Monsters of Rock, they used to happen quite a lot. Look who, wanker, blah, 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 blah. And someone said, that bloke's calling you a wanker. I was like, which bloke? They went that way. I went, yeah, fuck you, mate. Ha, 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 back to my drink. And then about half an hour later, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
And I'm going up the stairs, and and this bloke's chasing up. Oi, oi. He's chasing after me. So I turn round, and I'm now facing him, and he's coming up. And I went, come on then, you cunt.
Yeah.
And he turned and ran.
Yeah.
Boy, was I relieved. Yeah. Quite a big bloke.
Was it Neil Murray?
It was just lucky it was the stairs.
Yeah.
I had the high ground, you see.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, I woke up the next day and remembered it. I was shitting myself. I was like, what the fuck did you do?
Yeah, it could have been.
Idiot. What if he'd gone all right then and killed you? You know?
Yeah.
Happy day.
So Guy Bailey, he was always recognisable by the hat I used to find.
I don't think I ever saw him without that.
Without, because, you would scan across the crowd in whatever bar it was and you just see the hat. Oh, there's Guy.
Because he was quite reasonably tall.
There's Guy, because it was like everyone, if people had a hat in those days, I would say you had a baseball cap or you had one of those leather cowboy hats that you see for sale at Reading Rock. But Guy's wasn't either of those.
No.
It was sort of like a brown hat.
Definitely brown.
I don't know, it had a kind of, wasn't a cowboy hat. I'd find it hard to describe. But
it wasn't
a
trilby, was it?
No, because it had a big
Homburg.
Maybe like a Homburg or something.
Yeah. And I liked that sort of look they had because it was quite sort of Oliver Twist, you know.
Yes, it was like waistcoats.
Yes.
Yeah.
Waistcoat, but
pinstripe waistcoats and a kerchief.
One time, I must have made a few bob, very rare in those days, and I'd bought myself this beautiful white silk scarf for just these occasions.
Yes.
And I was with my then girlfriend who just couldn't give a penny away without screaming. You know, she was psychotic, you know. And we were going somewhere in a taxi with Spike. He was like, "What, like your wheat scarf?" And you know, Spike always wore a scarf. Yeah. Do you remember?
Yeah, I do remember. Yeah.
And I was like, and I like it was all sort of polka dot or something. And I went, "I'll swap you." He was like, "Whoa, boy, uncanny lad!" You know, so he takes his filthy.
Yeah. So how many years would that have been round his neck?
Because I didn't know till I held it. Yeah. Nylon.
Yeah.
This nylon.
He got it off the market somewhere.
Probably got it off a tramp. Yeah. That just been sick.
Yeah.
And swallowed his dentures. Yeah.
But because he was quite good looking, it looked good on the Spike.
So he unwraps this disgusting nylon rag and passes it to me. And I give him my brand new white silk scarf. And my girlfriend's going, "You can't fucking do that. You can't." I'm like, shut up, bitch.
Yeah.
You're lucky to be here. I didn't say that. And I was like, "Oh, it's all right, darling." Yeah, so I ended up with Spike's lovely. Yeah. I can. Do you know how many times I wore it, though?
I think you wore it for about the next 2.5 years.
Never. No, I did wear it, actually. You're right.
Did you?
Not for 2.5 years.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that kind of look obviously suited you very well.
Oh, very
much. You know, the scarf and the waistcoat, the Oliver Twist.
Yeah. So I had the hair in those days. Yeah. You know, I had the hair and the gaunt.
See, whether Guy Bailey had the hair or not, I'm not sure.
Well, we don't know.
But he was the one who, I mean, he came up with a lot of the songs, didn't he? He came up with a lot of the early, "Oh, it's 7 o'clock, time for a party." That one.
Yeah.
That was theirs.
That was one of my
favourites. Hey, you. What you gonna do? Stand for your man.
Just like that.
Yeah. He came up with all those, Guy.
He did. He was the epitome of. I remember once when classic rock moved down to Bath over 20 years ago now, just for a brief period, when Future bought the magazine. And we're in this open plan office. And literally on the next desk across is Total Guitar.
Right.
And they're all guitar nerds. Yeah. You know.
As you'd expect.
Very placid. Whereas we were rather less so. But I remember they were having an argument one day. And it was like, they're having an argument? Boy, this might be good. Mm. And what it was, because as well as the nerds, they did have a couple that could really, you know, they knew all about that. And their guy that knew all about that and could play all that inevitably was like Elon Musk, you know. Yeah, he was like, you know, couldn't fucking relate to anything. And he was saying Steve Vai was at that moment the greatest guitarist in the world. And a couple of timid ones are going, "Well, I'm not so sure."
Yeah.
So I waded in. I was like, "That's bollocks. Yeah. That's absolute fucking bollocks. Yes, he can widdly, 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 widdly." I said, "But can he write a fucking hit? And if he can, why hasn't he?"
Yeah.
Because he hasn't.
Good point, yeah.
Not one fucking hit.
No, he had to wait for old Cove to come along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And do one of his old songs that probably Bernie or Mickey Moody wrote, you know. And I forget what example I gave. It could have been Guy. You know, it wasn't Guy at the time. But I'm like, you know, Ronnie Wood has written some great songs. And I don't think he can solo, just does block. Keith Richards can't barely play the fucking thing. But he's
but
written
he wrote
some
Jumping
shit.
Jack Flash.
Yeah. Brown Sugar, Satisfaction, the list goes on, you know. So I said, you know, you're talking bollocks. I also remembered, do you remember, was Dave Oberly before your time at
No. Dave Oberly was the ad manager when I turned
up. He was. Yeah. Well, he'd been, I don't know what, the drummer in Griffon.
Yeah.
Griffon. This prog rock group. The only prog rock group that never did anything.
Yeah, yeah.
He told me once that they had some shows in America opening for Stevie Wonder. He said, "We come out and because they used to have flutes He said, "All this whole black hoodie is going, what the fuck? The fuck off, man! Where's Stevie? No, you're like in old England times." Well, he was a great one for, you know, the production on this is amazing.
Yeah.
And I remember that song had come out. "We built this city."
Yeah. Bup,
bup. Bup. "We built this city on rock and roll." Bup, bup. And I used to hate that song. Yeah. I hated it.
Hated it.
I hated it. Because it was like, we built this on rock. But you're not, that's not rock and roll.
Yeah.
I remember sort of voicing this opinion in the Kerrang office one day, and Oberly was like, nah. Gonna have to stop you there.
Yeah.
The production is simply superb.
And I'm speaking in my role as the drummer in Griffin, not the ad manager of Kerrang.
Yeah, don't. Did I tell you I was once in Griffin?
Yeah, you barely mentioned it. It's like I would. Ow! What was his name from Sounds? John, the ad manager on Sounds.
Who'd also like been Rod in the band. Stewart.
Yeah, exactly. ow! You see. Come along. He was that.
John Newey.
He would dress exactly like the choir boys. He was dressed in the suit and the waistcoat and the kerchief, and he'd always be. And he was his best mate was Chris Jagger.
I was just about he was to always say going, that.
Oh, me and Chris was down at the so and so. Yeah,
they used to go out because Chris Jagger looked exactly like his brother, and John Newey looked exactly like Rod Stewart when he was in the Faces. I mean, the choir boys got all that from the Faces.
Yeah, I mean, John Newey's hair used to cause great amounts of speculation because it was kind of scaffolded up by this point.
Yeah. Well, when I first met him in the late 70s, it was the real Rod Stewart.
But as
he got older, obviously, it had to be a bit of adjustment.
Yeah.
Accommodation.
Yes.
But he told
me... To the actuality.
He used to boast about him and Chris going to some party and they let us in because they thought I was Rod and he was me. Yeah. Chris Jagger being,
You what's your name? Jagger.
Jagger.
Yeah, you can call me Jagger. So he was insane. He'd been in a band, hadn't he? John Oberle. John Newey had been in a band.
Yeah.
I can't remember the thing. So both ad managers, you got to remember, like, back in the day in a magazine, the ad department and the editorial department, you just sat together. There was no division of labour.
No.
They sat there flogging ads and we sat there cranking out whatever it was.
Yeah.
And the music would be playing and all the rest of it. And
really loudly.
Yeah, so it was still a kind of rock and roll job. You know, Steve McTaggart, who was Dave Oberle's...
Hold up!
He was Oberle's assistant, wasn't he? He was managing... Tarazara.
Have you heard the new Tarazara 12-inch? Like,
they're supposed to be flogging ads. Oberle would be on the phone talking about Griffin or something. And McTaggart would be trying to get gigs for Tarazara. Or get them a record deal, you know.
I know.
Yeah. McTaggart would insane.
McTaggart would go, you coming to the Tarazara gig tonight? I went, no, we've got any ads today? Yeah. Any fucking ads to pay the wages? But here was the thing. So,
hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Because I think when Ginger came in, there was this... I didn't pick up on it at all at the time. So I don't think I really knew them as well as you guys did. But there was definitely a tension between Ginger, as the other guitarist, is getting all the attention.
Yeah.
And also Ginger was pretty fucking good guitarist.
Ginger was a really good guitarist, and also I think it became obvious as soon as he formed the Wild Hearts that he was a different kind of songwriter to guy who was a very traditional rock and roll songwriter. That was it. You say no frills, Keith Richards style, three or four chords, that was it. That was your song. It didn't need anything other than that, in his opinion. And Spike was a great singer for that because he was like a young Rod Stewart.
And they got
them and the Wolfsbane and the Choir Boys, they did a, I remember, I think it was, it might have been the first cover story I ever wrote for Kerrang. They went on the road together.
Right.
And we did a cover, a joint cover of Wolfsbane and Choir Boys. I can't remember if they were photographed together or it was one of those split things. I don't remember exactly what it was now. But I remember the tour, and that was, you can imagine what the tour was like. And very soon after that, the Choir Boys got a record deal with EMI and managed by Sharon Osbourne.
They got the deal.
I can't remember what way round it
they
was.
They got the deal, and then Sharon, the label had said, you need a proper manager.
Right, okay.
And Sharon, it was just at that moment where she had taken on Lita Ford. She was looking to expand her empire.
Yeah.
And shortly after, she took on Bonham.
Yeah.
And others. And I remember Spike, you know, who's wonderfully indiscreet. He was like, fucking Sharon's fucking marvellous. I can't do the thing. But I was like, yeah, yeah, because I knew her. And he goes, the minute she came in, our publishing deal, and it must have meant him and Guy, he said, we got 180 grand straight away like that the minute Sharon came in. Just renegotiated everything.
Yeah.
He's like, 180 fucking grand? I was like, what are you going to do with it? He goes, I've already fucking spent it. Have a scarf.
Well, the ridiculous thing was, Wolfsbane at this about the same time got their, you know, they signed to Deaf American, which seemed like a really weird thing, because Rick Rubin really liked them.
Yeah, I really liked them.
Yeah, so. They were brilliant, but Rick Rubin was completely the wrong producer for them because he did that Rick Rubin thing of making. But as the upshot of that, I think they had to go to LA, and the Choir Boys also went to LA. So it was a ridiculous situation where they both, you know, found themselves in LA at the same time as well.
The first time Spike and Guy and the rest of the guys turned up in LA, Sharon was their manager. I was in LA, I don't remember what for, but she said, listen, the Choir Boys are arriving today, I'm taking them out for dinner tonight, will you come? I was like, yeah. And it was because she wanted to, she didn't really know.
Did you have your scarf on?
Probably.
Yeah.
And I think that was one of the occasions when I realised Spike and Guy were actually the nucleus
of the band.
The creative thrust, as it were.
Yeah.
And I remember Ginger looking very kind of not involved.
Yeah, because Ginger was a lot more, he was also into a lot of those American bands, not the hair metal bands, but sort of New York type.
Yeah.
Bands, wasn't he?
Well, he joined a couple, didn't he, briefly
he
here
did
and
event,
there?
Yeah, I can't remember who it was. Some terrible either, fucking like sub Aerosmith, you know, cult New Yorker. Like, fucking, what are you doing in that, you know? But yeah, so they were always like, you know, Ginger, I remember the day, I'm sure we've spoken about before, but the day Ginger got sacked.
Yeah.
Because he came into Kerrang and said, oh, I've got to go and see Sharon. And we were like, oh, she's going to sack you.
And then he came back
about an hour later with a face like death. She sacked me. I said, don't worry, Ginger, I've got a couple of videos you can review.
But do you think that was Guy behind that? Because
I don't know. I really don't know.
Well, because I tell you, I...
Because, as you say, Spike was always quite indiscreet and would tell you what was going on, but Guy was quite enigmatic and never used to say very much, as far as I can remember.
Yeah.
And Nigel Mogg, I think, by that point, didn't he end up getting some kind of modelling contract or something and went off and...
Moggling?
Yeah, some kind of thing like that. It was in Japan.
Nigel Mogg?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I'm sure that's right. Huh. It definitely is right, because I'm telling you now. Huh. Something like that happened. So Nigel Mogg was getting a load of attention. Ginger was getting a load of attention. And
they didn't have a drummer, so that
didn't
just,
have a
left,
drummer, just left
Spike and Guy.
So then they kind of reformed a bit around. Once Ginger left, they got someone else. And
yeah, kind of a mini-me.
Yeah,
Guy, also named Guy.
He was also called Guy, wasn't he? It was confusing. But then Ginger went off, and obviously Dante, by that point, left Kerrang, Dante Benuto, and had a deal doing A&R at Atlantic. And I remember him going on and on about how brilliant Ginger's demos were, and I was just like, Ginger? They won't be any good. And
well,
then he played them, and they were fabulous.
Really good,
yeah.
No, I remember hearing them.
Yeah.
What I was going to say is, there's no basis I'm basing this on other than my own thoughts. But my thoughts back then were that Spike was, you know, pretty sus guy. You know, he understood the business in a way that a lot of them didn't. And my feeling was that he'd have been okay carrying on with Ginger, simply because Ginger had that amazing hair.
Did have good hair. Yeah.
I think the best hair I've ever, natural. Seriously, I've got a picture of me somewhere with Ginger in LA on that trip, on the couch at the place I was staying, playing with the dog. And I'm sitting here like this, looking at him, and I've got what I've got going on. And he's sitting down here, leaning over to play with the dog. And all you can see is this enormous
crest.
And you can hardly see his face, but it's all real. It's all natural.
Yeah.
I met Ginger's, one of his children, last summer or whenever. And I said to him, do you know your dad, when I first met him, had the most incredible hair I've ever seen? And I called Chill and he was like, yeah, so what? Yeah. That world didn't exist because I wasn't alive.
Yeah, yeah. Kids.
But so I don't know about that. But my feeling was that maybe it was Guy saying, look, I fucking can't stand this guy anymore. Let's get rid of him.
Maybe. Maybe. Because I think Sharon would have realised that Spike and Guy were the two. I mean, Ginger, when you look, Ginger was never going to stay in the choir boys because it wasn't his thing, you know. So I think even if they'd gone up and become an Aerosmith or something, he would have been there for a couple of albums and then he would have left.
You reckon?
Yeah, I know. No, I reckon. I do reckon that. Because I just think if you listen to the music he's produced and the way that he's worked, I think he, you know, he's a lone wolf. He's that kind of guy, you know.
He is. No, you're absolutely right. And you look at his career and he chops and changes all the time.
Yeah, yeah. He's quite sort of restless creatively. Whereas, you know, had Guy stayed in the choir, because he left and God knows what he did, but you know, they would have produced album after album that sounded very much like the choir boys.
I'll tell you one thing I didn't realise about them in those days, but it became thunderously clear to me as the years went by, is the authenticity of what they did. Because I was a big Rod Stewart and the Faces fan at that formative age when you buy your first LP and your first records out of your money, your own money, newspaper round or whatever it is. And so for me, the Choir Boys, when I first encountered them, were entirely derivative. Like any of that means anything anymore. But in those days, it was a different world. 88, 87, it was... I still felt you had to have something original.
Yeah.
Which, duh. And Hey You was... You know, that riff has been used so many times. They don't even disguise it.
Yeah.
But... they proved themselves, I think, incredibly authentic. I mean, I had some dealings with Spike 2 or 3 years ago, and he didn't appear to have changed.
No, one I don't bit. Think he has at all, yeah. And also they did have, I mean, you know, they did sign to EMI, they had the Sharon Osbourne thing, and they did have was it a number one album over here?
Number
certainly
two.
A gold record,
number
wasn't
two.
It? Yeah,
so a bit of what you fancy.
Yeah, so they had
I had a gold,
big,
they gave me a gold record
yeah, they
for
were
it.
A big band, you know, they were... you know, a major act. So,
do you know what fucked it for them in America? What fucked it for them was America.
Yeah.
And I always found this, because I thought it was the same with Thunder. You know, they came onto that scene a bit latterly, but they were a little bit older and had already gone round with Terraplane.
Yeah.
So they weren't really part of that scene, but they had their success pretty much the same year the Choir Boys did. Except Backstreet Symphony only got to like number 21 in the chart. Thunder were the new flavour of the month. Mm. Rightly so in those days. But they didn't have a great manager. They had the guy that used to be the singer before Danny came along. You know, fucking no good for American success. The Choir Boys had Sharon Osbourne. When she was really Sharon Osbourne, Lita had just had a huge success with...
Close My Eyes
with
forever,
Ozzy
or whatever. Oh yeah,
but also Kiss Me Deadly.
Yeah, that was the famous. Was when she was on the cover of Kerrang with a horse.
That's
they
right.
Sent the
John.
Big, they sent the big man out to get that story.
I remember she said, "You get on one horse, and we'll do the interview like that." Yeah, I'm like, "Fuck off!" Yeah. She said, "Well, how about we drive jeeps and you do the interview like that?" I was like, "No." How about
so
you sit
said,
there and I talk to you?
Yeah. So she said, "Send a real man."
So you went.
Yeah, so I went, yeah.
And what did you ask her? Did you say give us a kiss?
Oh, God, I can't remember. Probably.
Chris Holmes standing there looking at you.
Kiss me deadly.
Oh, very good, very
Chris
good.
Holmes staring at me in case I make a move on his wife.
And Holmes, looking at you, said, "You kiss her, dude, and I'll close your eyes forever."
I tweeted that I would have believed him because Chris Holmes was massive. He was about 7 feet.
He still is, mate. Yeah. He still is.
Yeah.
He's got his new, he's doing his new tour and album, Mean Man.
Yeah.
Very aptly titled.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
I'll give you three words that will tell you why the Choir Boys didn't make it in America.
Go on.
The Black Crowes.
Okay. You've slightly. Preempted me here. No, you're right. But,
so to speak.
But there's no reason they couldn't have made it as well.
No, that's true. That's very true.
But why didn't they? Here's why they didn't, in my opinion. The Black Crowes, when I first met them, you know, were complete unknowns. I don't think their first album had even come out. There's a huge wasp trying to get through the window.
Try and focus on what you're
sorry. And I remember being with them in San Francisco in the back of a tiny van.
Yeah.
And they did this show half full. And because it was San Francisco, Lars turned up afterwards.
Of course he did.
So we're in the dressing room, and the Black Crowes had already kicked David Lee Roth out of the video shoot for Jealous Again.
And explain the connection between David Lee Roth and the Black Crowes.
David Lee Roth's manager, Pete Angelus,
yes,
took on the Black Crowes, like Sharon had with the Choir Boys.
Exactly.
They'd already done the deal, and the label have said, look, we need someone better than their best mate managing them. Let's get a big-time proper manager. Enter Pete Angelus, who, again, I knew. And so Pete took me to the video shoot of Jealous Again. And there were all these drop-dead gorgeous, I mean, LA. Yeah, these are the most incredibly sexy-looking women in the world. And they're all posing and doing this stuff for the video. And Roth is in there directly.
Wasn't Roth supposed to be like, because they were the Picasso brothers, weren't they? Pete Angelus and Dave Roth.
Yeah.
Roth was he like a partner or something?
Could be. Got a taste.
Yeah.
Change a word, get a third.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, in management styly, that's what he was doing. Yeah.
So I've been brought along as a sort of come for the hang. It's all good times, you know. And I turn up and the atmosphere is not good, but I am busy looking at the girls, to be honest. I mean, my God. And suddenly I'm hustled into a. If you just wait in there a second, you know. And the next thing I see Angelus with his hand on Roth's back, leading him into another room.
Mm.
And then all you can hear is. The Black Crowes have said to Angelus, get that fucking asshole out of here or you're fired. And I remember being astonished because I was thinking...
You can't call Dave Lee Roth an asshole.
You can't tell him to get out. He's here.
He's Dave Lee Roth.
He's doing you a favour. Yeah. So if ever you see that video, none of the girls...
No, I do remember the video, yeah. It's in the big mansion, the garden, isn't it?
A bit boring, isn't it? A bit boring? Jealous Again?
Yeah.
The video?
Don't you think I want to, don't you think I would, however it goes.
That's not how it goes.
Yeah, don't you gonna tell me, baby, if I only could. That one, isn't it?
It doesn't go like
it
that.
It does.
It goes, jealous.
Yeah, he goes,
jealous
don't you
again.
Think I want to, don't you?
Jealous. Jealous again.
Maybe I'm blind, maybe I'm something, maybe jealous. Jealous again.
Yeah, maybe.
That's
maybe.
How it goes.
Yeah. Well, exactly my main memory is none of the birds are in the video. I'm like, why? Okay, throw Roth out, but birds.
Let's be honest, the Choir Boys would not have chucked the girls out.
Definitely not. So here's the thing. This is 1990, and the Black Crowes go on tour of America. And they play every shithole you can imagine. Jealous Again comes out. It is not a hit. They only take off big when Hard to Handle comes out, like second single. But all their career and that first few months after Angelus was managing them, it was literally every bar and shithole they could book them into just to keep them working. And Spike, I remember saying to me, it fell apart with Sharon because she booked us on this stupid tour of America. And we were just playing these bars and clubs and no one knew who we were. And I'm thinking, oh, you mean like the Black Crowes?
Yeah.
Except they did it. Because to them, it's not like we're in America. It's just where they live. So where else are we going to play? But I think that alerted Sharon to the fact that they were kind of one and done. You know, they were a very British thing, I think, to kind of get that success and just go, we're good.
Yeah.
I mean, Thunder, another typical example, the second album went to number two, and they were, on Axel's recommendation, then the hottest star in the world, they were signed to Geffen. And they had bad luck with grunge and all the rest of it. But I remember them saying they never actually did a tour of America. They did a few shows off their own back.
Mm.
And I'm thinking, but that's where they would have met Thunder in America. Free, Faces, Who, Bad Company. I mean, it was a fucking no-brainer. But it didn't happen because they didn't want to put in the work.
Yeah, there you go.
They'd come home here and do the Hammersmith Odeon and, oh, we're amazing, you know. And I think that is a British conundrum. You know, I think they feel we've done the Hammersmith Odeon. Why are we going back to playing some horrible bar in Poughkeepsie? Who knows? But Guy. Now, the thing with Guy is, I think he did have hair because you could always see it underneath.
Yeah.
But did you ever see him take the hat off?
Never saw him take the hat off, I don't think.
No. Do you think he slept in it?
I wonder if he did. I wonder if he slept. I wonder if he actually slept. He always had a very kind of sallow complexion.
I tell you, a few years ago, when we first moved to the farm,
yeah,
and I always have to qualify this by saying we don't own it.
It's not your farm.
It's not my farm.
They're not your cows.
They're not my. Well, there aren't any cows, but if there were, they're not mine either. We rent, you know. But if you look out our back garden, there is the most spectacular view of the Thames Valley. It's amazing. And in photographs, you can't really see the fence.
Yeah.
So it looks a bit like,
that's,
you know,
yours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I did a picture once, saying, you know, my back garden. And on Twitter or something like that, Facebook. And Guy replied, he goes, here's my back garden. And it was like a scene out of Bukowski's Skid Row. I don't know where he was living, but he was like taken out of his window and it was just a street full of homeless people and drunks. And yeah, it looked really like fucking hell.
I mean, he could have been one of those people, you know, like you got those guys who like live in Soho for their whole life.
Yeah.
He could be like that.
Yeah.
You know, whereas most people go, oh, I can't stand, after about a year, you go, I can't stand this anymore.
I think it was more like Kentish Town.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Soho. Yeah. It didn't look, it didn't have any charm.
Yeah, but K-Town, as they call it. K-Town's very boho these days.
Well, then probably further afield.
Maybe it's probably not. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Those places now, they'd like, you can't move for million quid
houses.
Where
was Guy from? He wasn't from Newcastle.
I can't remember. I don't think he was. No one knows where he was from. No.
He was a bit of a man of mystery, wasn't
he? Yeah, mysterious guy.
And do we know how he died?
No, I don't. I wouldn't like to speculate.
Yeah, I
Spike
don't
just said he passed. I mean, him and Spike must have been lifelong friends. So
yeah,
and they'd agreed to get the band back together, hadn't they? So that was a shame as well.
What's the deal? Someone sent me a message the other day saying they saw the Choir Boys.
Well, there's another Choir Boys.
It was Guy Griffin singing.
Yeah, so Spike got kicked. Classic
Ginger
Spike
got
style.
Kicked out of the Wild Hearts.
Yeah, Ginger gets kicked out. You know, Spike gets kicked out of the Choir Boys. That can't happen. You can't get kicked out your own band. It's like saying, you know, Steven Tyler got kicked out of Aerosmith.
Yeah.
It's like, it can't happen. No.
But it did.
But it did nonetheless.
But does Spike have a like Spike's Choir?
Yes, so Spike's got the. Well, that was going to be Spike and Guy. So what, and Nigel Mogg, I think, as well.
Right.
So what now would happen? I don't know whether he will.
Interesting combo, though, because, you know, like Guy was the master of the catchy, simple block chord, beautiful thing. Spike, I didn't realise till years later, and I finally spoke to him when I wasn't completely out of my mind, and he wasn't, or maybe he was. he's an extremely accomplished, classically trained musician. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. No,
he's a better guitarist than any of them.
Yeah, he is. Then maybe he can do the album. Maybe he just do it. Spike will do it on his own. Who knows?
I don't know.
I hope he does.
Happy days.
Good luck, though. Spike. Good Sorry luck, to hear Spike. About Guy.
Yeah.
Good luck, Spike.
Yeah.
We
Guy
love
was
you.
A fantastic character. Yeah. Now, before we go, better news on the old rock stars dying front. Our dear old friend, you mentioned him earlier, Blaze Bailey. Bailey. See, there's
no
Guy
relation.
Bailey, Blaze Bailey. Yeah. Do you think Bill Bailey should be should be looking over his
poor old
man?
Poor old Blaze had the old triple heart bypass or something.
Is that what he had?
That's
I know
what he
had.
But I saw on Twitter or whatever it was, Facebook. So yeah, he'd had the op and he was off to convalesce.
Right.
So we wish him well with his convalescence.
We really do, and don't rush it.
No, don't. Blaze. No, that's good advice.
I myself had a heart attack 18 years ago, there was no triple heart bypass surgery or anything. They just put a stent in. But fuck me, man, it took, I reckon, at least 2 years to...
Really? Wow.
Yeah, you don't realise it at the time. You think, I'm good. No, you're really not good.
Yeah.
And in the end, it was a really long time. It was only when I started going to a gym again and things like that I started to get a little bit better.
Yeah.
But they really take it out of you. Well, yeah. So good luck, Blaze.
Good luck, Blaze.
And on that bombshell,
goodbye.
Goodbye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
How do I stop this, Fern?